This episode of Yes But Why podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
My joke that I often share when people are like, how long have you been doing this? Is that, you know, doing it professionally for quite a few years, but my parents saw at a young age that I was never going to excel at sports. So they were like, let's get her in a drama class, right? Like, it seems like this would be something that she could be into. And so I feel really lucky. I grew up in San Diego. So there's a San Diego Junior Theater has an amazing program where you can take classes and you can get on stage and actually be in these full productions. And so I took the classes, and I think the ones that I was always more interested in were the improv comedy ones. We did lots of short form. Some sweet teenager was wrangling a bunch of, you know, hormonal middle schoolers, getting us all taught. So it was a really, really cool opportunity from a young age that I was really interested in.
Yeah, wow, that's awesome that they have that. Whenever I see those opportunities for kids, it's like, gosh, that's fun. I wish I had that kind of stuff. It was like, it wasn't until there was a school nearby and they were like, hey, they're auditioning for ladies to, be in the boys' school play. And I was like, what? I'm doing it.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, my gosh. That feels like a fun, like, school show somehow. Like, I want to be in, like, the TV version of that story of, like, the girls that are being bussed into the boys' school to go do Romeo and Juliet, right?
For real. Yeah. No. Yeah. Oh, no, that's an excellent idea. I'll write that idea down. I love the fact that there's this group. And how long has that theater been going on that's doing this great children's education?
I think that I don't want to misquote, but I feel like it's over 40 years. Like, I think that there's like a group of San Diego natives. Like, there's a Facebook group of people that have like been a part of it forever and are like, remember 1976's production of Midsummer Night's Dream? And they like post these like throwback pics and stuff. Yeah. So it is definitely, if you are a San Diego native and you talk to other natives, you're like, were you in the San Diego Junior Theater? It's like a little like cult within a cult. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's if there's improv involved, it's very culty, of course.
Yeah. Get them in early. Get them indoctrinated. That's how it works the best. Yeah.
Well, you know, anything that says, hey, be happy, there's something suspect. Why are we enjoying ourselves? This is clearly not the right thing.
Exactly.
Man, so you were in plays right away, just doing, you know, classes and whatnot. Did you then focus on theater in high school and college? Like, did you just, that was your thing and you wanted to be involved in it all the time?
Yeah. You know, in middle school, when I was like, you know, going through that and just like awkward, horrible phase, and like school was like not the place where I like felt like I could be my best self. I felt like, after school, to be able to go to a theater program was like such a blessing. And then I had this moment when I went to high school, we actually moved to LA. So I was like, okay, am I going to like reinvent myself? Like I can be a cheerleader. I'm going to just be this popular, cool person. And I remember standing at like the freshman orientation fair, and there was like the cheerleader booth. And then I like looked over and there was like all the theater nerds probably like playing Magic the Gathering, and like someone's playing with like a hacky sack or something. Like, you know, like they, and I just like remember the two tables of like, my fate awaits me. And I was like, I got to go be with the theater kids. So I was like, these are my people. Who am I pretending to be? Like, I auditioned for the school plays and did like choir and everything. And then that was, you know, I went to a Catholic high school. I didn't grow up Catholic, but my parents were like, we should send her to a Catholic high school. So then it became this like cool, like artist haven within this like sort of religious school upbringing that I was in. So
yeah.
it was an interesting kind of turn of events of like, I'm really into this. And then I went to UC Santa Cruz, which like, if you're familiar with the California collegiate system, I mean, it's a summer camp of a campus. Like it is just literally like beautiful fields and very artistic hippie types. And I was all in at that point. I was like, get me a theater degree, get me performing. This is my life dream. Yeah.
Oh, tell me about the Arts yeah. Oasis at UC Santa Cruz. It sounds exciting. I already have a degree in theater, but I'd be happy to get another one. That sounds exciting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so funny because it's like when you talk to other people that went to UC Santa Cruz, you like when you find out that, well, our mascot was the banana slug. So we were not, again, not big on sports. I was following a trend ever since a young age, like not the athletic type so much. You hear like, you're a banana slug. Like people are like, you get this kind of like look in your eyes and then you kind of like just touch your heart and people just like know like, oh, wasn't it just so magical? Like it really like, it just was this beautiful campus and a really unique like system of like how they got their students into the school. Like you not only went to UC Santa Cruz, like you could be in these smaller colleges. So you had this kind of like intimate feel within this larger university. So yeah, it was, it was very magical and kind of set into motion. Like I love the Bay Area. I love this envisionment of being an artist in this way. And I feel really lucky. I did not know that I was going to go there. It was sort of just like throwing the dice and just seeing what shook out. But it really ended up being like the perfect place for me. Yeah.
Hmm. So like, wasn't like your first choice. It sort of ended up being, that's an interesting detail for sure. There's so many of those things in our lives where we think we know the like right one. And then we get like our third choice and turns out that was the best one. So interesting.
Totally. And like when you're, you know, putting on your online application to these different colleges and you don't even really know what those 4 years will look like. And it's like, great, I guess I'm just signing on to the next thing. Here we go. And then you show up and you're like, oh my God, this and it was all actually meant to be. And like the theater that they did was very like experimental and weird. And there was like a cool stage in the middle of the forest that they would do like Shakespearean plays and like an old like horse carriage barn where they turned that into a theater. So there's a lot of opportunity to do a lot of weird theater in college, which I'm very grateful for.
Does that college also have, is it like a liberal arts school? There's like all majors. It just happened to be that your theater department was particularly magical, or is like, are the people that like were biology majors equally enchanted?
You know, it's so funny. I really don't know. They're doing this big push now. Like right around the time I was leaving, they were trying to get more like of an engineering presence because it is kind of like close to the Silicon Valley area and like tech with being such a big deal. So they were trying to really make themselves like a research university, like in the woods. And like all their like literature now is all about like science and math.
In
and,
the
like,
woods.
Y'all. Yeah, I'm like, don't pretend. You're still a magical fairyland campus. Like, you know, people are still going to go there because they're attracted to that. Like, don't try and be anything else. Like, just be your magical little self. So, I think so. I think a lot. But psychology was the number one major for, like, years there. I don't know if it still is. So I think most people that went there knew that they were like, we're going for the trees. That's why we're going to Santa Cruz.
I feel like psychology is a solid major for like a school in the woods. Like that seems right. You know,
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to have thing, you know, you like the woods behind you. They're sitting on the couch staring out into the woods as you tell them, you know, maybe you should talk to your mother, you know, stuff like that.
Right. Like, what do you see in the tree that reminds you of your mother, right? Like, all, you know, practicing it out. Yeah.
That's so fun. Yeah, I went to a college too that was like so not sporty. My senior year, they suggested to the populace that they might have football the next year, and there was like a riot. There was like people with signs about how like that would ruin. And I was like, poor people who play football, like they're not terrible humans, like because My sophomore year, they added baseball, and that also didn't go well. But turned out they got baseball players that were the same kind of people that would have gone to the school anyway. Like, I was like, guys, don't right. hate them just because they like playing baseball. Like, they're also in your philosophy class. They're also talking to you about, you know, politics, you know, at lunch. Relax. Like, they're fine. Yeah. My college is one of those two where, like, when anytime I meet anyone that went there of any year, we're immediately like connected. I'm like, hi, how are you?
I get it now. Like, I get why, like, there's like, you know, I thought it would be like with just like the Ivy League schools, or if you're like in a certain fraternity, you're like, that's my, like, those are my people and that's my like crew. And I'm like, no, you just go to a college that has a cool vibe. Like, people are going to be like, that's the time. It was so magical. you get the song and everything, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. My high school had a song. It was a Catholic school for girls. There was a lot of singing. Yeah, for sure.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. We had a pretty similar, so yeah, it was the Catholic school that really needed, like, I was like, I need something magical for college. Like, I need my yin and my yang here for both sides of the coin. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Oh, man, so fun. Well, I'm glad you had that good experience. Based on the research that I did, it looks like you got some solid degrees and you were very focused when it came to, you know, like being involved in the arts and being interested in teaching it. Did you always know that that's what you wanted to do, or did the program at UC Santa Cruz just really make you feel like it was the right path?
Yeah, you know, it kind of, I think it was a little bit of both. Like, I think finding that, like, in high school, how much those artistic teachers like set a precedent when you're like an artistic kid. You're like, I need guidance. I need help in this area. And I feel weird in my body, but then, like, here's this cool art teacher who, like, you know, is teaching me all this stuff that, like, makes my brain feel like on fire and so excited. So I think I was really inspired by that. And so I kind of always jokingly said, like, I eventually just want to become like the old kooky, like, drama teacher that wears like the long hippie skirts and like does like cartwheels in the like parking lot across like campus. Like,
yeah, heck
like,
yeah.
That's where I want to. Yeah. Like, I was like, I want to eventually be that. Like, that's where I still think in like 30 years, you'll find me like go back to school, get my teaching credentials and like just cartwheel myself across like a high school campus. Like, so that's, I think, eventually like where I wanted to end up. Yeah. But then I think like being able to be in a graduate study program where I got to be like a TA for the first time and teach collegiate level, you know, students drama and theater and lead sections and have these conversations was really where I was like, oh, I love teaching. Like, I'm a teacher. This is really happening. So yeah, I think it was a little bit of like, I want to get there eventually, and then being able to put it into practice. I just was, teaching is just such my happy space. It's really, really where I think I thrive the most.
Man, the idea of TAing in college sounds so awesome. Like, that is just so cool. Like, the idea of teaching those classes. My teaching situation has been very trial by fire with a lot of like, hey, do you want to do something like today? And it's like, what? Yeah. So it wasn't a lot of like preparation. Yeah. And then eventually it was like, wait, 6 years have passed and I've been teaching? Wait, who told me that? What? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that sounds so luxurious, like having this opportunity to like be a TA and sort of like learn with the teachers how to approach certain subjects and like, you know, how to lay stuff out so that people really understand it. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, highfalutin concepts when it comes to theater. Certainly when you're presenting historical stuff, like, this guy thought this was how you did it. And then you talk about that for a while, you know, and it's like, have you wrapped your brain around that idea? Okay, throw it away. Here's a brand new dude who was like, what if we did it this way? You know, so
yes.
I feel like that just getting your brain, like, I remember my theater history class was like first thing in the morning in college. And I was like, why? I want to understand, but it's so early. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and, like, and I care, like, but no.
if you're in theater too, like you're like legit, like I'm here on campus until 10:30 at night running a show or checking or doing whatever, right? Yeah. And then you want me to come at 8 o'clock the next morning to like learn about historical dramas? Like it's just not gonna happen. So I think yeah, there was a little bit of a disconnect there of like trying to get those GEs going, trying to like, you know, do the theater thing. But it was such a cool, like, and cause I think people were so passionate about it. Like, I feel very lucky with the classes that I got to work with, that these were, you know, freshmen coming in that were just like, so stoked that they were. And like, I was just like, we're all in this together. We're all learning. And so it was just really fun to hone that style and meet those people and try things out where you have this guidance of a, you know, professor who's been doing it for 30 years to be like, do more of this, do less of that. Like, I think there was a lot of like, you know, they wanted us to explore and hopefully really instill that love of teaching along the way, which I feel really like it wasn't like, you know, too siloed of like, this is my class and just grade my, you know, papers and then leave, or just like do whatever, like see you at the end of the quarter. Like they really wanted us to succeed, which was really fun. Yeah.
Do whatever. That's totally possible though. I can see that happening. Yeah. Some teacher who's like, see ya, enjoy teaching. And you're like, wait, what? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm checked out. As long as we can all put in a grade at the end of the term, I don't care. Like,
yeah, like, high fives to everybody. I think that would have
been really disappointing. Man. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So tell me about your path after school. How did you, from UC Santa Cruz, how did you launch into sort of the quote-unquote real world? Like, what happened? How did you get there? And, you know, you seem quite organized. So, you know, how did you figure it out?
Yeah. So I, you know, graduated college in 2011, which if everyone remembers was a great time to be looking for a job. So that was like, I think what prompted where I was like, you know what, I'm going to like do this additional year of schooling. And so then I like ended up doing the graduate year and staying an extra year in Santa Cruz. So it was like around 2012 that I was like bouncing around trying to like, I knew that I wanted to end up in the Bay Area. I was like, I was applying for jobs up in this part of town. And I was like really trying to, you know, make something happened theatrically. But my family was back in San Diego. And then there were some like small theater things that were kind of popping up as opportunities. So I was like, you know what, I hate to be one of those like boomerang people that go to college and then move right back in with your parents. But I was like, I'm gonna do it. So I did move back in with my parents. I lived there for a bit and was like really trying to like make a theatrical like career happen. Like I was like understudying and like trying to like schmooze and like my way into the San Diego like theater community. And right around that time there was I auditioned for an improv team. And so that was like, I think the catalyst that ended up starting the next 5 years of my life was just literally Googling, like so many people have, how to make friends, right? like, I'm back home. I have like one friend here in San Diego. I'm schmoozing with people that are 20 years older than I am, like it, that are established theater folks. Like, how do I just make friends? And so I got on an improv team and it just like kind of changed everything from there was where the next kind of leap went. Yeah.
What was the team's name?
So they are the Hinges. They were one of like San Diego's longest running teams. And this was much at a time where, you know, before there was one united like training center or anything that was doing long form improv. They were an indie team that was, you know, practicing and driving up to LA and trying out, you know, different forms and just seeing what they could take when people would come to town and maybe teach or do a little bit here and there. But they taught me pretty much all of the fundamentals of long form improv that I learned up until that point.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
Very, yeah. I like the idea of it being very community, you know, like that there, you know, there's a bunch of people that have done it for a while and they get some new people in and it's like, yeah, let's all work on this thing together. There's just something really nice about it. It's one of my favorite things about improv is the sort of community aspect of it.
Yeah. And I think like, timing is so everything, like we are, but how like things are just meant to be will kind of happen, that it's like if it had been 4 years prior or 4 years later, I don't know if I would have like found my community in the same way. Like I would have probably ended up taking the route of like, you know, doing the full improv series at a theater or trying to meet people that way, you know, but I being able to come in and be like, I've done comedy, I've done improv, like, just teach me what I need to know to, like, work with this team. That I think that was just, like, a perfect fit for me and really brought me into the first wave of this whole, you know, solidified improv community in San Diego, which the timing just was amazingly perfect.
So did you then, how long did you perform with the Hinges?
Yeah, so I was on that team for about, it was definitely 1 year. That then around that time, there was rumblings of this theater that was going to be established called Finest City Improv. And I was nannying, and I was like, kind of like the little girl I was nannying for was like about to go into school. So I was about to like either try and get with a new family or find another like job, like trying to just kind of see what was out there. And they were like, oh, you should apply to like work at this improv theater. Like, if you're into this improv thing you've been doing, you know, they need help around the office and like getting the theater started.
The family said that?
So then, the improv group said that.
Oh, I was going to be like, wow, family that you worked for was so attuned to you.
I wish. Yeah, they had no idea what was going on. Yeah,
totally.
I think that they thought I was totally crazy. Like, I was like, they were like a very, like, you know, just like physically fit and like beautiful, like upper class family. And like, I felt like I always like came in like, honka honka, like, let's do crap. Like, it was, yeah.
That's the best. I would love that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So funny. So back to Finest City Improv. You apply for the job over there. What was the job?
So it was a community manager position, kind of just all hands on deck. Let's get this theater physically built. Let's get people enrolled in classes. Let's start selling, you know, team building workshops to companies. It was just the founder was looking for someone to essentially kind of be her right hand gal of like, let's get this thing going. And then we ended up working together incredibly well. Like, she had a lot of ideas and was always like thinking about like, what can I do? What's the next innovation? How are we going to make this thing grow? And I was like, great, give me a task and I'll make sure it's done. And I will implement the system and we'll make sure it happens. I'll connect with the people. And so we just like got into this groove where we created a community. Like, we got classes going, we started training teachers. And then I moved within the company a couple different positions, but ended up really just loving working with the students and being that head teacher and training director. So I worked there for about 5.5 years and really just got this San Diego improv community up and rolling, which was just like the coolest, most wonderful opportunity I could have ever asked for. Like, so incredibly grateful that that was a part of my journey.
Yeah. How did you know how to do all those things? I mean, you know, well, it's a lot of things. It's like between like fundraising and filling classes and getting corporate workshops, that's a lot of different skills. Like, how did you just know how to do that thing? How were you able to help her? I mean, clearly you did. How did you figure it out?
You know, it's a great thing to have a community. Like, I think that I learned a lot from the people that were there. Of course, learned so much from Amy, who founded the theater. Like, you know, she has tons of business experience. So whether it was like the actual like day to day of like how to run a business, you know, I learned a lot from her in that way. And a lot of it was just like people skills, right? Like, I feel like I came from a sales background. Like, my dad was always in sales and I watched how he talked to people and, you know, worked with his crew and like, you know, just was that presence in the room. And so I think I just kind of soaked that all in and was like, great, we're selling improv, we're community building. How can I be a face that people want to connect with and want to come back to? And then just trusted that it would grow from there. And like, it's going to be corny, but like, if we built it, they will come. And like, holy shit, like, they came. Like, there, it really grew like really rapidly. And so just kind of trial and error, figuring things out and seeing what worked and kind of carving out what our voice was in the San Diego community.
So when you got to your 5.5 year mark, when you decided to move on, was it like you needed a new adventure or you just knew you were done with this one? How did you move on and what was the next adventure?
Yeah, I, so many tears. Like, I'm a big crier anyway, but this was like 3 months of crying because I was like, you know, kind of at that place where I had gotten married and I was like doing all this stuff to like supplement improv. And I was like, I just felt like really kind of overwhelmed of like, what is at the core of what I want to do? Do I love teaching? Do I love performing? Do I love the admin side of like running a theater? And so I think I was just kind of running through a lot of ideas, and I still had that little like college girl in the back of my head who was like, come back to the Bay Area, remember the Bay Area. I just had always wanted to like live up here. And so through like a series of just events of like, you know, got married, like it we physically had moved the theater to a new location and we were like up and running. And I was like, I think it's time for me to either like, to both like let myself have new space and like let the community have a space without me. Like, I was like, I've done so much and I've given so much, but like at a certain point, the burnout is real. And I'm like, am I doing my best job for the people that I want to serve? Right. Or would it be best if someone like young and as fiery as I was 5 years ago, like wants to come in and be like, hell yeah, this is what's working great. And like, change all this shit. Right. Like, I was like hoping that might kind of give space for that as well. Like just an inevitable shakeup. And so, yeah, I ended up just being like, I'm going to give 3 months notice. I am moving in July. And so for 3 months or so, we worked together to kind of like transition out what that would look like. And now I live in Oakland and I'm kind of figuring out what the next step of the journey is all about.
Yeah. You're working on lots of different projects though. Yeah. In Oakland.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm doing, I think my kind of mantra is what I'm coming back to is like finding the passion back in what I want to do. Like if, if a project doesn't like elect, like now I sort of know what I like to do. So instead of just saying yes to everything, like sort of making those opportunities that really get me excited and that I want to dedicate my time to. And I have gasped, taken a 9-to-5 corporate job. Ah! So that's like the biggest change too, is that like, I am like the theater and performance isn't going to be the like sole way to make the money anymore. Like I want to return to like the joy and the feeling of what it's like when you do it for fun.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. That does make it tough for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So like you just moved to Oakland, like how long ago?
So we're chatting in October and I moved here in July. Okay. So about 4 months, we've been here about 4 months.
Wow. You know, it can be really, yeah. I think you're right when you say like the burnout is real and that, you know, there needs to be a time for people to move forward and do other things. Like, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I feel like sometimes people will stick around and it's like, even if they, you know, even if it's like, yeah, you're going to stay in the same town, cool. But like maybe switch up which part of the theater you're focused on. And it can be tough to do all those admin kind of things. But I mean, unless you're into it, which I guess my question is your 9-to-5 something that's sort of scratching that admin itch?
It is still, I think, scratching a little bit of the creative itch and a little bit of the people itch is mostly, I think, people itch is a terrible phrase.
It really is. I'm terribly sorry.
For the record. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a bad one.
So I'm stepping into a role that's like employee engagement and like office coordination. So it's with a creative design firm. So they're all interior designers, like the chicest, coolest San Francisco types you could ever imagine. Right. And they're like looking for someone to bring more joy to the office, like do events and team buildings and celebrations for the company that aren't just a cake on a Thursday that's like, great job. Like, it's like, what can we do that's like sustainable and like actually makes, you know, it's like something that the people really want to see, maybe give back to the community. So I think crafting experiences that make them happier and make the office a more joyful place to be. But that's kind of, I think, taking from what I taught in the team building and in the corporate improv workshops, you know, and using that now to like be that space for this company exclusively.
Yeah. Wow. That's I didn't know that companies had people that worked for them that did that. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, if I think it's a definitely like a Bay Area thing.
Sure.
I saw a lot of jobs where, you know, it's office coordinator. It's, you know, make sure that there's toner in the printer kind of thing. And also someone who, you know, is going to make the office a better place to be. And like that they really invest in employees up here that, you know, have that kind of different feeling than just like slogs all day long.
Yeah. Just get it done. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's certainly a place in the world for woke employers for sure. You know, and the idea that people are sort of overworking themselves, I don't think is going to stop anytime soon. So you might as well input a little self-care into the workday.
Yeah. And I think what's really cool is that there seems to be like a conscious shift, like where like I still see companies that are like, we've done one. This is our one team building activity for the year and we will be an effective team because of it. Right. Like that are just very just like check it off the box. But it seems like there is a change of like how can we kind of holistically invest in employees from all stages, like not just throw a yoga mat in an empty closet and be like, it's a wellness room, but like really make these things exciting and like fitting what the people actually want versus what they just think that should check the box. Right. So yeah, it should be an interesting role to step into.
Yeah, man, it's quite a move. Did your spouse, were they down for the move to the Bay Area as well? I mean, you know, that's two careers moving. How did that go?
Yeah. He is a very loving, patient man. Bless him. He is also not an improviser. So yeah. Double bless him. So I think, for him, you know, we were two San Diego natives, which is like pretty rare. People are always like, whoa, two San Diego natives. Like, and so we just kind of had run the gamut there. We were like, either we super invest in this and like stay here forever, or, you know, is this our chance to, you know, be young and do something maybe a little foolish and different? And his job was like, we want you to still work for us. So like work remotely, move to the Bay Area, like that'll work. And so
awesome.
It was, I think that's a really good move for everyone where we're just getting to figure out like a whole new city at like 30 years old, like moving somewhere and being like, we're brand new in town. Like what is going on? So
yeah.
A lot of change, but I think what having worked with like so many students that came to improv because they were new to town and they were looking for that friendship and looking for that community, you know, it feels kind of nice to be like, oh, this is something people do. It's not scary. I saw so many people be successful in it. It's just you gotta put yourself out there and just be a little bit scared and a little bit nervous, and then you know see what comes out of that. And it's been working well so far. I think we're happy with the move. There was a couple of months where we were like, did we do the right thing? Is this really real? But it feels now like we're really settling into what the groove is going to look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you make decisions for, and you don't necessarily have to have an answer to this, this is a tough one. Like you're making decisions for your career and you're like working at one space, you know, and you're sort of present enough in your own experience that you know that you're burnt out and need to move on. Like, how do you choose your next path? How do you sort of self-examine to decide which one of the possible paths, or maybe you're in the midst of self-examination to figure out which one of the paths you want to focus on? What do you think about that? That's a big question.
Yeah. Well, it definitely, I think an interesting amount of time to really like self-reflect, because I knew I was like, great, we're going to move in July, but I'm going to give my notice in like April. Like, so like, let's set this in motion. Like it's going to happen. So I had like a good 3 months of living in San Diego and kind of like getting out of the arts to decide like what space that would hold in the next career. And then once I was here, I mean, just applying for jobs is just such like a soul sucking process. And just like, it is not for the weak of heart anyway. But I luckily had enough like communications with people that could help me get these like side hustle gigs. So there's a lot of work up in the Bay Area. If you're hungry to, you know, go on Craigslist, go on auditions, like put yourself out there, sign with different talent agencies and be like, cool, yeah, throw a hat on me and now I'm a brand ambassador in your local Safeway, right? Which I was like, cool, like that could maybe be a path. Like, could I make this side gig hustle life work for me? because I was doing it for the first like 2 to 3 months, like up until like I got this job a week ago. I was doing that pretty much full time. And I was like, could you make that the whole gig? And I was like, for me right now, like it was just too unsteady. And I think coming from the place of like so much hustle and so much on the plate that it was like, I wanted a little bit of that steadiness, which is people I think either like always are leaving the arts to go do something that's like, I just need a 9 to 5 so I can just like leave my work at work, or they're leaving corporate being like, my soul has been sucked dry and now I need to have my artistic thing be my thing again. So I feel like there's always a flux of us trading jobs back and forth, deciding where it makes sense. But yeah, I think like one of those things that I just kept coming back to was like the idea of a weekend, like to just not have to like be working on the weekend, because that's when people can take their artistic creative time, and just having that freedom to really live life. I just have, and then like, yeah, kind of my final thought on all of that was that like people always say that to be able to be good at improv, you have to like live your life. And I felt like I was living my life so much in improv that I was like, I'm not doing my best improv because all I ever do is improv. Like I need to kind of diversify my life. And so I was like, I'm taking a ceramic class. That feels like the furthest thing away from improv would be to like put my hands in some clay and like take a ceramic class. So trying to just kind of find like what life is out there that you can take to your improv versus making improv your entire life.
Yeah. Man, yeah. You know, it's also really good as an artist to like take those breaks, you're right, and like live, because, you know, what do you, if you're writing the great American novel, but all you've ever done is sit down and write novels, what are you writing about? Like, you know, it's great. Your imagination, I'm sure, is awesome, but you also kind of need life experience to be able to really truly be the, like the artist, the best artist you can be. I think you know, we're all seeking to have sort of ultimate empathy. Like if we can understand where everybody's coming from, then that's the ideal. And that way we can, you know, use whatever muse we've got going to communicate with whatever group we feel like we want to communicate with. But because we're so attuned to everyone, you know, we have the ability to tell a story that sort of universally applies. And I think that you really like need to live your life to do that. Like you need to be in the trenches. Like when you're saying like, you know, it's not for the faint of heart to be applying for a job, I was like, it's also not for the faint of heart to like apply for like Medicaid. Like when I had a baby, they offered me Medicaid and oh my God, the paperwork. Oh my God. Like I have a college degree. I filled out a lot of paperwork in my day. I've done so many temp jobs, so much paperwork, but God, it was like, I was like, guys, if a person had like any amount of other things to do in their life, then they, I mean, come on. Like it was so much. Yeah. Most of the world, I would say, is sort of like an uphill battle of insanity. So you might as well have an ebb and a flow of it, you know?
Yes. And I love so much that you like brought up that idea of empathy, that it's like, how can you like portray interesting, unique characters on stage without having like gone through that? Like I was like figuring things out, because I was like, yeah, things were great. I was making a living in the arts. I was like doing the thing and teaching. And I was like, but that isn't the story of like what so many people actually experience. And like, what is the other side of like who I'm trying to connect with and who I'm trying to be? And like, I was like, I just want to like suck at something so badly, which again, why I took this ceramics class, is I was like, I know I'm going to suck at this. And like, I just want to just be bad at this like experience and really feel like, yes, like I'm learning, I'm trying, and like, I'm totally failing. And like, that is, I don't know, just that reminder of what it's like to be in that student mind. Like, you know, that it's really scary to put yourself out there, and like, it's humbling along the way. And so, yeah, just, I think it's a good thing for teachers to remind ourselves of like, yes, we've played Zip Zap Zop 150 times. Like, it's so easy for us. Or like, we play with people where it's so easy, but like remembering how hard these things are when it's a new skill for you. And like when you're learning it for the first time. So yeah, it's been very cool to, I think, tap into that. And like, I of course like want to treat my ceramics teacher like an improv teacher. I'm like, did I do it right? Clap for me. And she's just like, it's not this kind of class. you gotta tone it down. Yeah.
Totally different vibe altogether.
Yes.
Oh man. Yeah, that's super fun. It's always nice too to like find different arts communities and see the sort of pocket of people that end up in that crowd. You're like, huh, okay. These are the people taking this class. Cool. Like, right? Yeah. Yeah, the other day, a friend of mine invited me to a yoga class, and when I got there, I was the youngest person in the room by like 30 years. And I was like, oh, okay, what's up? Hey. I was like, all right, sweet. Seniors yoga, let's do it. What's going on? I made friends with everyone. You know, it was just like,
yeah.
It's so fun. Like, when am I ever talking to, you know, seniors? Never. So it was I was like, cool, what's up? What's it like? What are you doing? Yeah. Like, what's your life like? You know, I mean,
right?
You don't think about stuff until you get into it. Like, I legitimately was 100% unaware of the whole parenting child thing until I had my kid. I didn't have a kid till I was 39. You know, I was like living the improv teacher lifestyle until 39. And then I was like, P.S., other things to do. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
So now there's that sort of total insanity that I get to investigate. But it's so fun to be like, okay, let's like get into it. Like, let's enjoy it. What are moms about? Let's talk. Like, just to get into the new world. Like, I'm real excited for you and your new job, because not only do I feel like the world would be a better place if there was improv like infused in everything, but like also because you get to like try out a new thing and like check in with people. You get to do the fun part of improv, which is the like, I don't know, I like improv for making people feel good, like, because realistically in improv, like, everyone has a lot of like, oh, rules, but at the end of the day it's like, I'm just happy you talked, like, like, and I teach level one, so pretty much that's all you're looking for, but, you know, like, I'm just so proud that any of us can continue to do it, that it's like, don't worry, don't beat yourself up. And so like, whenever I talk to people in other kinds of jobs and I hear sort of any, you know, their level of negativity or, you know, bad self-talk, you know, oh, I'm no good at this. Oh, I'm not. I'm like, hey, you know, whatever you're doing, you're just trying. It's all right. You know? And they're like, what? Who's this? You know? So I think the improv teacher vibe, you know, can certainly help the new world that you're going to head into. And it'll be interesting the kind of personalities you get to, you know, soak up and experience and like see like, oh, what's this part of the world like?
And so much of that too was like in the interview process, where like, I'm sure that the people that I was interviewing for got tired of me bringing back every interview question to improv. But I was like, but at the end of the day, like, I'm just going to be like an improviser in the wild. Like, this is my heart. Like, this is where, like, in this, like, this is where my personality and what I believe comes from. And so, yeah, I think it's an interesting point to like, almost be like, I feel like I'm infiltrating, or I'm like the secret mole or something, where I'm like, I'm here and I'm doing this job. And yes, you will get toner in your printer, but you're also going to learn a lot about yes and. Like, it's just, can we teach it in different ways and really take it outwards? Which, yeah, you know, that's what my hope is, and still, you know, be able to have that carved out space at 7 to 9 to go and teach an improv class and still have that passion and that place where the teaching comes from. Because it's like, it is the teaching never goes away. I feel like once you're an improv teacher, once you've done that, like, that's just a part of who you are forever.
Yeah. I mean, it's I've often compared it to like a religion, because it's like sort of built in a similar way, and there's rituals and stuff. But there's also something about coming together and just telling each other it's going to be okay. And I think that that's a part of improv. And that's actually one of the reasons I believe that improv gets a bad rap. Like, while people are like, it's so dumb. And I'm like, I'm sorry that it's sad for you to be happy. I'm sorry that you don't like happiness, but that's what we do. So if you don't like it, skedaddle. You know, it's like the whole point of everything is like, just, hey, excited, yay, what's up? And, you know, some people don't like that sometimes, but I think it's totally necessary to, you know, the proper vibe of life. Like, how are you gonna get through even the toughest times? You need a little bit of like, it's gonna be all right, let's just edit this scene, start a new one. Like, okay.
right just applaud for yourself. You're just here, man. Just like have it happen, right? Like just that, I'd be just show up and clap. Like that whole idea, we just need more of that. So
yeah.
Maybe this company, they're going to get into like, all right, 9 a.m. We're clapping for ourselves for being here.
Oh my God.
But, you know,
ease into it. You don't want them to murder you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I want you to live. So. Oh man. So I have one last question for you. It might be a doozy, but maybe you got it on the tip of your tongue. In the experience that you've had, what do you think is sort of the best lesson you've learned about sort of career longevity, like keeping it going for yourself, like keep moving forward? How did you establish your method for doing that?
Yeah. You know, it comes back to one of the improv tenets is like, listen to what people are saying to you. Listen to what your heart is telling you. Like, I think for so long, I was like, I was feeling the burnout and I was like, is this going to be forever? Like it could be forever. I could absolutely work in the arts and be this person for this improv theater. But am I really listening to like what my heart is telling me or like what I feel like the community needs or what, like, am I listening to my spouse being like, are you okay? Is this what you want to do? Right? Like, is this what I want to do? So I think like, if you really listen to yourself and really wait to see like what comes to you, then you're going to make the choices that are going to keep you in this much longer than just like doing. Like, I think I could have done it forever, but it wouldn't have been the same as I listened, I heard, I made the decision and was like, great, let's just take it from there. And like, let's see what else is out there and hear what else you can take in. So yeah, I think it comes back to that. Your heart knows what you need and what you need to do more of or what you need to leave behind. So yeah, just listening. Listening is a huge, huge thing that I've been feeling for the last couple of years of just like, it's out there. You just got to like tap into it.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm a big fan of like, you know, seeing the signs around you and figuring it out from there. It's like, well, I keep seeing things about this. I must be interested in that. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, especially with so much coming at us all the time, there's like so much that we're looking at, that we're listening to, the images and everything. If there's ever a pattern that you notice, that's important.
Yeah. And especially like patterns within ourselves, like
how
are you showing up and like, how do you feel? And like really like tapping into that, that it's like, I don't know. I think it's easy, especially as like an improviser, that's like, you can put it on like, woo, let's do this thing. And like, you know, have that pep and enthusiasm, but it's like, where is it coming from? And like, what's really in your heart? Like, you know, and I think that mental check-in with yourself of like, am I feeling that pattern within me? Like what am I doing? So yeah, I think it's a huge, huge gift to be able to just to like take that time to like really hear what your soul is telling you to do.
Totally.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much for chatting with me and sharing your wisdom and your stories with me. I think it was really great.
Yes, such a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you taking the time on this beautiful Sunday morning.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Sunday morning.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.